Here we are with Richie Neal, Massachusetts 1st District, a Democrat, my congressman. I live in the 1st District. Let me ask you this, Richie. You've done so much. I mean, your name is on new trade agreement, and which you negotiated, and so much more. That's got to be heady stuff. How do you deal with it?
Well, I mean, I think it's based upon years of hard work, and I think that it's the respect that one earns, not just from their colleagues in the Democratic caucus, but also from people who might disagree with you on the other side of the aisle. So whether it was USMCA, H.R. 3 with prescription drug medications, or with the Secure Act, which is the most important advance in retirement savings in 15 years, a good IRS reform bill, a Pride Act that came out of the Ways and Means Committee. I think all of these have been based upon knowing how to take the temperature of the House of Representatives. And I've had the full support of the Speaker. I've had the full support of our caucus. And in fact, having a chance to negotiate a hemispheric trade agreement is, I think, going to be a very important legacy issue. But also, to point out that many of these initiatives that I put together have passed the Ways and Means Committee unanimously. I was in the Speaker's confidence as we assembled the articles of impeachment and made the argument, which Adam Schiff agreed with, that we should limit the articles to the two that we have passed on to the United States Senate. And I think that, again, having the regard of your colleagues is very, very important. And I always suggest that when people walk away, they don't have to say that they're in total agreement as much as they have to say he knows what he's talking about.
Well, it's clear that Nancy Pelosi, I'm saying this in the right way, really loves you. I mean, she's put you front and center when the groups face the cameras and the rest. Tell us a little about that relationship.
Well, I mean, you could see what happened even this week with our proposal on infrastructure. She's entrusted me with being a spokesperson for the Democratic Party as it relates to how we, in fact, are going to embrace what is an overdue initiative called infrastructure. Highways, roadways, bridges, airports, broadband, sewer, water, and rail are all important considerations for us. And I think that when the Speaker tasked me to renegotiate a hemispheric trade agreement, there's not anybody who would have said you get 193 Democrats to vote for it, or 192 Republicans, and 90 members of the United States Senate. And I negotiated it with the Republican administration and took the pains and consequence. And one little secret that I think is very important in negotiating, let people talk. So when we would go into the rooms with the United States Trade Representative at different venues throughout the Capitol, I made sure that everybody's opinion was offered. And I said to the ambassador a couple of times, and there were some ugly conversations, but I said to him on a couple of times, he was very frustrated, and I said, look, if we have to stay here for the next 6 months every day, we're going to do it, and everybody is going to have their opinion and thoughts considered. I said, you will end up with a far better product if people feel as though their voices were heard rather than their voices were being silenced. So we would take walks through the Capitol, and I would seek clarification so I could take it back to my caucus. And in fact, because we were able to use what is known as the regular order, we were able to come up with a product that, again, that nobody would have predicted would have even been possible. And I intend to apply the same model to negotiating infrastructure. And for those in western and central Massachusetts, my biggest priority as it relates to climate change is going to be the expansion of rail from Worcester to Springfield to Pittsfield.
How close are we to achieving that?
Well, I think that I'm told in conversations with even Republicans in the House that there might be up to 60 Republicans, 70 maybe on the high side, who would vote for an infrastructure bill. I think that what we need to do, I've been talking with Secretary Steven Mnuchin, the Secretary of the Treasury. I think that we need to agree on revenue mechanisms and not have one side try to undercut the other side once you reach the public arena, and in fact agree upon it and then step to the fore and announce it. One mechanism that I worked extensively on with Alan Krueger, the late economist from Princeton University, during the worst moments of the recession was what is known as Build America bonds. So surely that will be part of anything that we undertake. It worked extraordinarily well during the recession. And recall that, as you and I have discussed in the past, in a recession, there are two things that mainstream economists say that you have to do. One, you have to spend more money And two, you have to cut taxes. We did that because of Barack Obama and Alan Krueger. And at the end of the Obama administration, there were 14.3 million new jobs that had been created. And we went from an unemployment rate of 10% to less than 6%. And I think that those are the sorts of histories that institutionally I bring to these arguments.
There are those people who think that the President of the United States has implicitly or otherwise threatened the future of Social Security. You've been on this program a number of times and have talked about Social Security not going anywhere. Are you still so sure?
I am certain. I can tell you this, during my tenure as chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, there will be no threat offered to Social Security. And in fact, I always point out, as one who's pushed hard for more private savings based on the Secure Act, which has been met, I think, with critical acclaim, always remember, you can outlive an annuity. You cannot outlive Social Security. It is a bedrock guarantee of our retirement system, and never will I retreat on my support for Social Security.
And as long as you're talking about security, why don't we go to election security? We've heard all about the Russians, including from the Trump people. Maybe not from him, who takes a different view. But how secure are we?
Well, I don't think we are that secure. The FBI and the CIA are already warning that the Russians intend to do what they did the last time. They'll be abetted by the Chinese this time around and some other rogue opportunities. But here's my position. I still think, despite the genius of technology, I want a paper trail for my ballot. I want to be able to go back and count those paper ballots when there's a question. And I think that this fascination that we have with technology as it relates to electioneering is going to get us into trouble if there are not the accompaniment of paper ballots that we can go back and trace.
Richie Neal, you have a primary this time. It's not one that I fully understand. Does it? You just recited all of the things you've gotten done. Does it bother you, or do you think it's as American as apple pie? People have a right to run.
Well, I think they have a right to run. I think that the argument here is that as chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, when you oversee Medicare, Social Security, pensions, welfare, management of the public debt, all tax, trade, and tariff measures, that the administration of those responsibilities has played very well for my constituents. And whether it's in the far west of the district or it's to the eastern part of the district, time and again, we've been able to show how important this is to our hospitals in particular, to our Medicare recipients, to our Social Security recipients, and even being tasked with negotiating a major trade agreement on a hemispheric responsibility indicates, I think, that what has happened along the way. So I think anybody does have a right. I think that we take everything seriously and always very content to let the voters cast their judgment.
Debate?
Oh, for sure.
And you've done all these things, but only have a minute. But how do we know? I mean, we've got this program, of course, and several others, but how does everybody know all of those monumental things you've accomplished?
Well, the breakdown has been interesting in terms of the way that social media and what I would always call mainstream media have changed. And I'm a believer in mainstream media. I think there's a special obligation and responsibility in a representative democracy that media have to pay great attention to the questions in front of us. And one of the things that I do get disturbed about, and one of the reasons I'm such a believer in what it is that you do with public radio and PBS and others, that in a time when the public is uncertain as to what to believe, you still bring a steady hand to what we should believe as you sift and sort the facts. And then you allow the people to make up their minds based upon a fair representation of the information. And I think that more and more, as mainstream media has been in retreat, that there's more emphasis on conflict. And there are some, myself in the vanguard, who believe that we want our careers measured by what we've accomplished.
I have in front of me, I want to take a couple of extra seconds here.
Sure.
Richie. I have a piece of paper here that says that you released the following statement after hearing from TD Bank officials that the branch in the Mason Square neighborhood of Springfield would remain open with reduced hours. How critical is that?
Well, I think it's important. I think that you don't want to create in a the Mason Square area, which is on the State Street corridor across the street from American International College. And it is a minority neighborhood. And I do think that, again, you've highlighted it. The TD Bank announced that they were going to close the branch. And I called the president of the bank and I indicated to him that I did not think that was a good idea. I mean, it wasn't an incendiary conversation. I said I'd like him to review the decision. And he said he would do that. And then he called me back and he said, look, he said, we think that banking, because of consolidation, mergers, and other undertakings, coupled with the fact that there's less foot traffic in many of the banks today, that it would be a challenge, but he would see what he could do. And he called me to say that even though there would be reduced hours, that they would keep the bank open because the major foot traffic that comes through the bank is on Mondays and Fridays. They will maintain loan officers on the site during those days. And in fact, the ATM machines will continue to function on the site. So I think by avoiding a banking desert in Mason Square, we have once again come through for the people of Springfield and for people in a minority neighborhood.
I don't know. I was just recently on the west side of Manhattan, and there seem to be more TD banks on every block than there are Starbucks.
Well, you can be sure, Alan, that was the argument I used when I was talking to him. That's precisely the argument I used.
Richie Neal, always wonderful to hear from you. And thank you so much for doing everything you have by coming by and talking to us. We so appreciate it.
Always happy to do it.